All right, welcome back to the Viking Update Show. I'm John Krasinski of The Athletic, Timberwolves writer and sometimes Vikings writer here on the for The Athletic and on the Talk North podcast network. And sitting in as the main host today, again, for Jim Suhan, who is across the pond in Tokyo and Japan covering the Olympics, and he will be there for a little while longer too. So we are joined again this week by The Athletic's Vikings beat writer extraordinaire, Chad Graff. We'll talk a little bit about the start of Vikings training camp. We'll talk a little bit more about the clarity that has been brought to the Rick Dennison situation. We'll get into a little bit of everything of Vikings related as the summer has really kicked off for them. They're getting moving, and we can start to see how this team is coming together. Before we get started on that, I'll remind you that we were brought to you by Pizza Barn and Star Bank. Thanks for the support, longtime sponsors of the network and of this show in particular. And so, Chad Graff, how's it going? The first week is underway at Vikings training camp. I've been over, kind of stuck with the Timberwolves draft and them, you know, kind of spinning their wheels a lot and making a trade here or there, but not doing a whole lot else. Haven't been out to Vikings camp yet. What's the early impressions of how things are going out there?
Yeah, well, you guys are stuck with me for another week, so apologies for that. I don't know what it's going to take to get you out to camp since the Wolves have zero draft picks and we still can't get you out. But it's been a good first couple of days. I will say, I think one of my takeaways from the first few days, and I think I'm going to write about this unless it drastically changes, and we all know it could change on a dime, but Mike Zimmer is in an incredible mood. Like, he's been coming out to his press conferences smiling. He's jolly on the field. He's joking with Spielman. He's having a good time with Anthony Barr and Harrison Smith and the guys. And I think it's partly because this offseason, if you take a step back, went really how Zimmer wanted it to. Like, we all knew that the Vikings didn't have all the resources in the world to fix all of their problems. There was going to be a spot that probably suffered a little bit. And, you know, it was the spot that I think Mike Zimmer probably cared about the least. It was the offensive line. And in exchange for the offensive line not getting a ton of resources, Mike Zimmer got four starting caliber defensive linemen, three starting caliber cornerbacks, a new starting safety. Like, he got everything that he wanted on the defense. The defense should be drastically better this season. So, things went as Zimmer wanted, and he's a happy guy through the first couple of days of camp.
Yeah, and I think, like, I heard him. I've been listening to his press conferences when I've had time, and you could tell that he is happy, and he did say it. I think, you know, he's in a better mood because he has good players. And I think one thing from last year that was abundantly clear is it would have been one thing if the Vikings struggled and didn't make the playoffs because the offense fell apart, because they had injuries on to Cousins, or because, you know, the offensive line was not just couldn't get going, couldn't open holes for Dalvin Cook. You know, whatever reason you can think of why the offense, you know, turned into a 12-point a game unit and they just couldn't get going, that would be one thing. But when it's Zimmer's baby, when it's the defense, and when he is, you know, starting last season in training camp saying, I've never had a bad defense and I don't know why it's going to start now, like those kinds of things, it was, I think, a real hit to his pride that, you know, even though there's plenty of good reasons that it struggled with all of the injuries to all of the key players, I think that Zim always kind of thought that even no matter what I face, I'm such a good defensive mind, I'll figure things out. And he just couldn't do that last year. Now he's got the horses back, and it kind of changes things for him.
It definitely does. And you can just see how excited he is to watch the defensive line. Like last year with Danielle Hunter out, after Michael Pierce opted out, they were arguably the worst defensive line in the entire NFL. Maybe one or two teams could have an argument with them, but that was just a bad unit. And then behind them, there were tons of injuries. And I think it also compounded things that Mike Zimmer thought he was going to sort of reshape the defense on the fly last year, and be able to coach up some of the young guys like Jeff Gladney and like Cameron Dantzler. And then, of course, the pandemic wipes out OTAs and minicamp, and all of a sudden they're starting way behind in training camp and we're behind from the get-go. And then by the time Mike Zimmer felt like he finally started to catch up with some of the younger players, Anthony Barr was out. Danielle Hunter was out. Eric Kendricks at the end of the season was out. So it obviously just a really tough season for his defense. And, you know, he's excited, which I think is noteworthy, not just because it's the defense and because it's an exciting time of year, but because the Vikings are, you know, for the first time since Mike Zimmer took over, they're coming off of missing the playoffs. You know, we've talked for, you know, however long since Zimmer's been here, since 2014, about how every other year they make the playoffs, miss the playoffs, make the playoffs, miss the playoffs. Well, if this is the first year that they miss the playoffs back-to-back years, I think that's going to raise a lot of questions and present some tough questions for Mike Zimmer and his job security and things like that. But, you know, the Vikings have shown under Mike Zimmer that when expectations are not sky high, that's generally when they have their best seasons. And now that Aaron Rodgers is back in Green Bay and having the crazy press conferences he is, I think, you know, people probably aren't looking at the Vikings as closely, and that's just fine with for Mike Zimmer.
Well, and then, yes, and so one of the things early that we have been able to get to see, kind of stemming off of this conversation, is that Danielle Hunter's been out on the field and going through things, right? And so I think, like, I was really intrigued about what the process would be for getting him back up and running, because he came back after the contract dispute or whatever you want to call it. And when in OTAs, he was not really participating, or the mini camp, he wasn't really participating when he was back on the field. It was good to see him back in purple and saying, okay, we're not going to have a contract standoff between the Vikings and their best defensive player. But you still were trying to think, okay, what does it look like for a guy coming off a neck injury that has not played in a year? And is he going to be physically ready? What have you seen from Danielle Hunter so far in just these first few days of camp that would, you know, kind of at least illustrate a little bit of a picture of how he is physically and what the process will be to get him ready for week one?
So when I came out for the first day, I did not expect him to be doing much, because right. at that time when he signed his deal, he said, I'm going to ease into this. You know, I've been out for basically a full year. Remember, it was, I think, just like the third practice of training camp last year that he sustained the season-ending injury. So he really hasn't practiced in more than a full year, even, because they didn't have OTAs and minicamp. It's been a long, long time since he was on the football field. He said he was going to ease into it. So my expectation was they were going to ease him into it. Then you show up and, you know, of course he looks like the freak, you know, that we've all seen and expected, with biceps the size of my head and whatever else. And even Patrick Peterson, new player in the team, but somebody who's been to Pro Bowls with Danielle Hunter, came away and, you know, he was talking to us yesterday and said, I couldn't believe this guy. He looks like a Greek god walking out to the field. And so it was not just walking out to the field that he looked great, but on the field, you know, stood out exactly like you would hope and expect him to, really in midseason form, you would think that. And he's doing that on day one and two of training camp. That is a very, very good sign for the Vikings. Brian O'Neill, the Vikings' best offensive lineman, the right tackle who goes up against Danielle Hunter every day, came away and said after day one, I got a lot of things that I got to work on. Like, we were asking him about his contract status, and he was like, you know, I'm excited to see that right tackles are getting paid. I hope to get a deal done. But guys, look, I got a lot on my hands right now with practice. I got my butt kicked yesterday by this guy. I got plenty of things to keep me busy. So Danielle Hunter, I think you can, you know, 2 days into camp already throw a big check next to his name and say, that's not one that you're going to have to worry about for Vikings fans.
Yeah, I was going to say, Chad, so, I mean, it seems like, given that he's been able to get going this early and get out and do everything, like, there should be no reason to believe that he won't be ready for week one, right? That he'll be out there, barring, obviously, any kind of setbacks that happened during camp.
For sure. At this pace, I think he'll be out there for week one. And really, I think expectations are kind of full go. He's coming off, you know, if you ignore last season, two straight seasons of 14 and a half sacks. And I think that, you know, that could be in the cards again this season. We'll see what happens. But he's got, you know, two massive, massive interior defensive linemen right next to him. And, you know, I think, you know, expectations can be just as high as they would have been at the start of the 2020 season for Danielle Hunter.
Another name that's popped up quite a bit early on here, KJ Osborne. What are you seeing from him? Is it, you know, is the excitement or the at least the intrigue around him in the summer that he had and the shape that he's coming in, is that worth noting right now, or is that just a little bit of early training camp positivity?
Well, it's interesting to me because I kind of went into day two's practice thinking, we hear this all the time, you know, so-and-so has looked great this summer. They've been hitting the gym. They're in the best shape of their lives. I think we've heard this with Jordan Matthews, if I'm even remembering his name correctly, when he was supposed to be wide receiver three. So we've seen this movie and watched this show before. And yet, so with those expectations and having watched KJ Osborne, quite frankly, struggle quite a bit as a rookie last year, both, you know, unable to get onto the field as a wide receiver, and then in the role that he was essentially drafted for, punt return, arguably, you know, at least according to the stats, maybe the worst punt returner in all of the NFL. So I took all of the praise with a lot of skepticism. And yet in practice on day two, I sort of watched him more closely, wondering, you know, is everybody kind of full of crap? And he legitimately looks good. Like, he made a 40-yard catch off a Kirk Cousins pass that had Cousins as fired up as we've seen in training camp. He, you know, we're 2 days in, so there's a long, long way to go. And as Clint Kubiak talked about yesterday, what you do in the preseason games is going to matter a little bit more than what you do on July 29th in front of, you know, 600 fans here. But if you're looking for, you know, a reason to be excited about wide receiver depth, so far, KJ Osborne is providing some.
Do you think is Didi the favorite for that third spot? Or, like, I mean, he's coming off of the knee injury and everything. Is it really just a wide open battle there?
If you had to handicap it, Didi Westbrook would be a slight favorite, but I don't think he's as drastic a favorite as, you know, a lot of people thought as soon as he signed. I would just say two caveats when thinking and talking about him is, yes, he's put up great seasons in two of the last 3 years, but even before he suffered the ACL injury a year ago, he was inactive for five of the first six games. I think the first two were because of a shoulder injury, but then the Jags just decided, you know, even once he got healthy, that they were going to make him inactive. And I think that's worth noting because, you know, the Jaguars aren't exactly a hotbed of skill position talent, or at least they weren't a year ago. And he wasn't getting onto the roster. So were the Jags missing something, or was there, you know, legitimately something there to keep Westbrook as an inactive? And then once he finally did get into the game in week seven, suffered, you know, the season ending injury. And so the other part of that I think is important to note with Westbrook is this guy is only, what, 9 months removed from ACL surgery. Like, I know that the timeline has sped up a lot in the last 10 years as, you know, medicine has improved, but that is not very long, as Dalvin Cook will tell you, and as Mike Hughes will tell you, and as, you know, the players who have suffered that same injury will tell you. It takes time to, even if doctors tell you, you know, you're healthy, do what you want to do. Dalvin Cook talked openly about, like, it's hard to mentally trust it and to, you know, make the cuts necessary as a punt returner, which Didi Westbrook wants to be on this team. Like, you still have to trust at full speed that your body is going to hold up. And that's what training camp is going to be for Westbrook, I think, to, you know, tell himself mentally that he can do all the things that he did in 2018 and 2019. So I do think he'll probably make the team. He's probably the favorite to be the third wide receiver, but it is far from definite right now.
We're going to take a quick break here to listen to our some words from our sponsors, Pizza Barn and Star Bank. But when we come back, we will talk a little bit more about Rick Dennison. We'll get into the kicking situation and a couple other things. But first, from our sponsors, Pizza Barn and Star Bank.
Have you tried to call your bank lately? Do you bank locally? Star Bank is our bank at the Talk North Podcast Network. They're a family-owned local bank with branches across central and west central Minnesota. With Star Bank, you get all the bells and whistles you would expect from a bank these days, but they have no 800 number, no call center, and no confusing phone queue. You can even request your banker's cell phone number. That's how they operate. Star Bank is a true Minnesota family-run business. Check them out at starbank.net. Star Bank is a member FDIC and equal housing lender. Also, check out the John Krasinski Show at talknorth.com. That is our our NBA and Wolves show. Good episode this week, if I do say so myself. We also want to thank Pizza Barn, Pizza Barn in Princeton, pizzabarnprinceton.com. Jody Stay runs a community-oriented, family-oriented family business in Princeton, and she now has a pizza truck, a food truck, with more than pizza. My wife loved the cheesecake. They have all kinds of cool stuff. So check them out, pizzabarinprinceton.com. Check out the menu, delivery, takeout. If you're ever in the Northwest Metro, you're not far away from them, right off 169. And now they have a food truck. You can hire the food truck to come to your event, to your neighborhood, whatever you want. And we just highly recommend the food and the people at pizzabarinprinceton.com.
Okay, we're back here on the Viking Update Show. John Krasinski of The Athletic with my teammate Chad Graff breaking down a lot of the Vikings' kind of early impressions coming off of training camp the first couple of days here. And Chad, when the Vikings reported, we got the total clarity on the Rick Dennison situation. Courtney Cronin from ESPN reported initially that the two sides were parting ways. That's not exactly accurate because, you know, they have essentially reassigned Rick Dennison. He is still on the staff. He's still going to be giving input into the day-to-day operations, into the game plans, into the evaluation of how things are going on that offensive line. But because he does not have the vaccine, he will not be allowed to be hands-on with the players. He will not be there for games, things of that nature. So, you know, Courtney was dead on in terms of that they hired a replacement or at least another depth offensive line coach. They elevated Phil Rauscher, but Rick Dennison will still be with the team and still be advising it. What was your take on how everything finally kind of shook out when the dust settled?
Well, so I think there's two important things that we've learned since we last spoke on this podcast. The first one is something that Mike Zimmer revealed, which is that a month ago when they were trying to persuade Dennison to get the vaccine so that he could still be the offensive line coach and the run game coordinator, it was actually, and you know, I think that this may surprise some people, but it was Mike Zimmer who was the one who was kind of fed up and like, all right, if this guy's not going to get it, like, you know, let's move on. I'm not going to sit around and wait all day for this guy. And it was Rick Spielman who, you know, perhaps had the cooler head and said, you know, let's see if we can't figure out some role. Let's try to design some way or keep him on staff so that if protocol changes in 6 months or a year or whenever, then perhaps he can return or let's try to figure something out. So it was Mike Zimmer who, you know, by his own admission was not very patient and not eager to hear how Dennison felt about the situation. Which surprised me a bit, but also I think the other thing that we've learned is just how involved he's still going to be, or at least how involved they say he's going to be. Clint Kubiak told us yesterday that after every training camp practice, the whole offensive staff gets together and Dennison pops up on, you know, Zoom or whatever app they're using and they dissect practice film together and go over various things. So he is still, you know, with the offensive coaches, at least for now, every day. Mike Zimmer said that he'll help out Clint Kubiak with game plan stuff as the season progresses. It'll be interesting to see if he's still chatting with the staff every day once we get out of training camp and the season gets rolling. But for now, anyway, he gets access to, you know, the tape of practice the second practice ends and then dissects it with the coaches. So Rick Dennison, while not being present, not being at the facility, is still meeting with coaches every day.
I really enjoyed it, Chad, watching Zim, because you're right. Like, it was clear that he was not happy with the situation, that one of his soldiers was, you know, not, was kind of defying, you know, in essence, defying the head coach and just saying, you know, it's clear that Zim said, come on, let's just do this so we can get moving. And Dennison was like, no. So I think that obviously upset Zimmer at one point, but then you kind of watched him kind of go into spin mode of like, well, you know, we're going to be fine. It's just, you know, he's not going to be on the field, but that's not a big deal. And it's like, really? Like, okay, then what do coaches do during game days? Like, does it really not matter at all? Like, I mean, this is still a significant thing. And in fairness to Courtney, I think she had a lot of it down, was that It's a very substantial change in the structure of the coaching staff at a position that is probably under the most scrutiny right. outside of quarterback. And you just all of a sudden at the start of training camp, the guy who has been leading that the whole way kind of has to step to the side. Like let's not minimize this, you know, too much here either.
And the guy that your first round pick has been talking to and working with throughout, right. like Christian Darrisaw, you know, that's who he went to and talked to. Wyatt Davis, your third round pick, that's who he went to and talked to. The other note that I will say from training camp is Phil Rafter, the new offensive line coach, checks every box for what you would imagine a stereotypical offensive line coach. A bigger guy, I was joking with Judd Zolgad yesterday, he looks like he'll go to, you know, Applebee's after this practice and order like a 96-ounce steak with six Bud Lights and polish those off in about 10 minutes. He is the loudest coach at practice. You can hear him from four fields away. He's yelling all of the things that you would expect with the same vulgarity that you might expect. Like, he checks every box for what you would imagine an offensive line coach to be.
Did Judd give you some tales of our Applebee's days at Mankato training camps?
Well, so we were reminiscing about the Mankato days because, you know, TCO is a great place to cover things, and we get to our nice media center that's air conditioned with a fridge and a microwave and some snacks and stuff. But there was nothing like, you know, having a little bit of an expense report as you go to the Mankato Applebee's. And I heard some stories of some late nights and a few pitchers of beer along the way.
I'm actually glad that we're talking about this now, because I think next week I will bring Judd on and we'll just tell these stories because I'm telling, like, first for the listeners at home, and we'll go into this a little bit more next week. But in Mankato, when the Vikings were at training camp, most of us, because we are hotel point aficionados, would stay at the Fairfield Inn, which was out near the mall in Mankato. And really, the only you could walk across the highway to the Applebee's. That was kind of the main hub there. We'd get back from a long day and we'd go over there and we'd have some beers. And it turned into some long nights. And, you know, it would be every night we'd go in and the waitress there, the server there would know what exactly what we wanted to order, and they got a little hairy sometimes. But it is definitely a truly different experience, Chad, that I wish you could have had, because not only were there the Applebee's nights, but there were the going out nights. And that was when we were young and had energy and just made absolute fools of ourselves. But it's totally different now. Egan is kind of this, you're sequestered from everything. Everyone goes home at night. You don't stay at a hotel and kind of hang out. And I'm glad to have that for my family and all that. But you're going to miss out on some very bad decisions that you could have made had you been able to go down to Mankato a little bit more.
Well, and I only had one season there. But the other thing about Mankato is, you know, while there's limited options for restaurant nightlife, what have you, for the reporters, well, that means the same thing for the players.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
You would consistently run into them at Applebee's, or I think it was a Buffalo Wild Wings, whatever it was that was there. So I remember Taylor Heinicke sending over several rounds of drinks, you know, the night before an off day or something as things, you know, quickly picked up steam. I remember going to dinner and saying, like, guys, I got a story to write after this. I think, you know, it's just going to be a quiet night for me. I want to work ahead on some stuff. And then, you know, next thing I know, we're the last ones in the place and shutting it down. And that story didn't get written that night.
Boomtown nickel taps on like Tuesday nights. I remember Mark Craig came in one night with us and he said, nickel taps. He pulled out a quarter, slammed it on the bar, said, I'll take five of them. And then we just kept going. Just great stuff. But before we wrap up here, Chad, let's get back to a little bit of more worthwhile conversations. Brian O'Neill and the contract, where do things stand there? What's your read on that whole situation?
It's going to get done. I think Brian O'Neill is going to sign an extension. This follows the same pattern that it has for several Vikings players going back several years, that they signed their extension for their second contract in the training camp before, you know, entering what would have been a contract year. Happened to Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, Dalvin Cook. This is how the Vikings do it. They've already entered you know, negotiations and talks. And while they started far apart, the two sides, I think that, you know, is often how it goes. The agent comes in saying, I've got the best thing since sliced bread. And the team comes in saying, well, hang on, this, you know, look at this play. This wasn't very good here. So they're getting closer. I fully expect it will get done. The only thing that hurts the Vikings is that right tackles in the last couple of months have signed for bigger and bigger prices. And I think there's a little bit more of an understanding now that, you know, left tackle may not be so much more valuable than right tackle, which I think was the assumption for a long time, just because there are so many good defensive ends now. Like, look at the fact that Danielle Hunter is often going up against a team's right tackle. Well, you better have a pretty darn good right tackle. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, Danielle Hunter is going to eat your lunch. So right tackles are getting paid more. Brian O'Neill will get paid more than perhaps what we thought 2 years ago, but he's the team's best offensive lineman. The team envisions him bookending with Christian Darrisaw for years and years to come. It's just a matter of if it gets done in 2 days or if it gets done in 12 days. But before the season opener, I would expect Brian O'Neill to sign a contract extension.
And finally, Chad, you know, we're talking a lot about offensive line, Rick Dennison, Christian Darrisaw, who has been out so far. Like, it's a group that's in flux, and I understand it, and it's really important. But am I crazy to think that, given the history of this organization, that maybe the biggest issue facing them going into the regular season is the kicker situation? Like, I mean, with all of the skeletons in the closet, with all of the, you know, the torture and the torment that this team has been through with kickers over the years, I'm just frankly a little surprised that they are kind of throwing their eggs in the Greg Joseph basket and seeing what Riley Patterson can do and just being ready to start a season that they know they have to win a lot of games. They know they're probably going to play some close games with completely unproven kicking right now.
John, it's the Minnesota Vikings. No, you're not crazy for worrying about the offensive line and the kicker.
Oh, my God.
You know, we'll see what happens. Greg Joseph, you know, it's only been 2 days and minimal pressure and, you know, there are ample kickers who can make kicks with the half-filled stands that have been here in 95-degree heat. Greg Joseph, you know, to his credit, is one of them. He hasn't missed yet, which is a good sign. Riley Patterson is here. He's kind of off, like riding on a bike through most of practice. His injury doesn't seem too bad, but at the same time, he hasn't kicked yet. My bigger question is, I want to know what happens if in the preseason things go haywire. Lest we forget, it was a rookie kicker who missed, I think, one field goal and one extra point in a freaking preseason game that had no value going forward. And Mike Zimmer in a sideline interview is like, well, we're just going to go for two if this kid can't kick. What?
You and know, now that kid, by the way, is freaking Sebastian Janikowski pretty much.
Right,
like.
Right. So, you know, I think Zimmer, you know, has cooled down a little bit. We talked about him being a little bit more easygoing this training camp. Perhaps that will continue with his kickers, but we shall see. You know, Greg Joseph was kept, you know, last year on the practice squad. And again, this year, you can prevent teams from claiming somebody off your practice squad. So the Bucs protected him every week so that nobody could take Greg Joseph off their hands. So that's a good sign. It's a good sign that he hasn't missed yet, but it's one thing to make a kick on the fourth practice field at TCO and another at US Bank Stadium with Mike Zimmer 20 yards away staring you down.
Hey, listen, if there is one thing that can soil Mike Zimmer's sunny disposition, it's going to be if a kicker starts shanking extra points, you know, whether it's in practice or in the preseason or whatever, the old red face, I think, will come back pretty quickly. And, you know, this newfound Shangri-La that they have over there is going to be challenged, I think, pretty quickly if that happens.
Yeah, in fairness, we're only a couple days in as we have Jolly Zimmer. I don't think anybody in the media crew is expecting these 20-minute laughing, joking press conferences to continue for six more months.
Enjoy it while it lasts, Chad Graff.
Exactly.
Well,
yeah, it'll be fun.
He is Chad Graff. He's the Athletic beat writer for the Vikings. I am John Krasinski. This has been the Viking Update Show. Thanks again to Star Bank and Pizza Barn for their support, and we will talk to you next week.